Skinner, and here is Don Cornett of Exxon.
I have with me today John Tompkins from the Exxon Shipping Company, who is working on the survey of the vessel, and he'll tell you a little bit about what he's doing on the ship and how that's coming along. And then if you have questions about what we're doing in the various communities around Prince William Sound, Monty Taylor, our community liaison person, is here. And also have Don Marston, who's our claims manager, if you have questions about claims. And hopefully Suzanne Stolpe will be here to tell you what's happening in the bird and mammal rescue centers and answer any questions you have about that. Oil recovery in Prince William Sound is estimated to be about 2,300 barrels a day, the result of a very effective boom and skimming operation which now employs over 39 skimmers and 200,000 feet of boom. One of the major challenges of the cleanup operation has been communication with the hundreds of seagoing vessels, planes, onshore cleanup crews, and research activities involved with both offshore and onshore cleanup activities. To meet this challenge, Exxon, the State of Alaska, the Coast Guard, and the Federal Aviation Administration have established a joint communication center which will enable 24-hour communications throughout the Prince William Sound area. Communications will be established through a microwave link on Naked Island. The center is expected to be operational early next week. On the salvage, hull inspection on the Exxon Valdez continues at Outside Bay on Naked Island. Divers are surveying the outer shell and internal structure to determine the extent of necessary repairs. Until the structural survey is completed, the cost and timing of repairs is unknown. And as I say, John Tompkins will give you more details on that. On skimming and booming, the equipment from all around the U.S. and other countries continues to be shipped to Valdez to expand skimming and booming operations. Currently, 39 large skimmers suitable for heavy oil-water immersion are employed. Six skimmers are in Valdez being readied, and 40 are en route. About half of the skimmers are deployed ahead of the slick. The remainder are deployed in the most strategically sensitive areas in Prince William Sound. Boom in the water totals 200,000 feet. An additional 32,500 feet has been deployed for use in Whittier, Cordova, Kodiak, and Valdez. Another 157,000 feet is en route. The protection of key environmentally sensitive areas remains one of the most important cleanup priorities. The massive booming and skimming operation continues in Sawmill Bay to protect the San Juan hatchery. A three-tiered effort of primary, secondary, and deflection boom has been established. Other significant areas include Herring Bay, Snug Harbor on the east side of Knight Island, Point Eleanor, and in the northern Knight Island area and around surrounding islands. Exxon has also sent boom equipment to Seward as a precautionary measure to protect Resurrection Bay, as well as to Homer and Kodiak Island. Excuse me. Shore cleanup activities are escalating. State and federal agencies agree that the first priority is to continue to fight the oil before it reaches shore. However, a phased onshore implementation plan has been approved, and the first phase of the plan will be underway shortly. A first priority will be to screen affected areas for historical or archaeological significance before cleanup crews are sent in. Exxon has already hired an archaeologist to begin conducting these surveys. We're starting in the Naked Island group. In addition, the Shoreline Cleanup Committee has identified periods of time when cleanup activities can occur without harming sensitive reproductive cycles for fish and mammals. The committee has also established a new list of cleanup priority areas. In addition to the crews on the east side of Naked Island, an additional 500 Alaskan local hires will be added to the onshore cleanup effort over the next 7 days. All hiring will be done through BECO, the local contractor, and new hires will have to undergo a safety and orientation program. Interested persons can contact BECO recruiting offices in Whittier, Seward, Cordova, English Bay, and Valdez. Exxon's response team totals approximately 450 persons, of which about 125 are Exxon employees, and the remainder are experts from throughout the U.S., Canada, and the United Kingdom. About 400 additional workers, both union and non-union, are employed in onshore and offshore cleanup, animal recovery, and other support activities. Well over 250 to 300 additional people are aboard the 110 vessels contracted to Exxon. Altogether, about 1,000 contract personnel are now working on the cleanup effort. Further employment of local hires will continue as the spill effort progresses. All manpower is on hand that can be effectively used at this time. The forward edge of the spill in the Gulf of Alaska south of Nootka Bay is no longer proceeding westerly and appears to be breaking up in open ocean. There appears to be less oil in Prince William Sound, with the major portion on the east side of Knight Island near Snug Harbor. The oil has largely moved away from McClure Bay, eliminating the likelihood of impact on the Nelly Wan Narrows. Exxon representatives have received and are processing around 400 claims requests in both the Valdez and Cordova offices. A variety of different means is available to meet both short and long-term claims needs. A $10 million fund has been established to provide immediate interest-free assistance to those who are not yet prepared to submit full claims, but who require monetary support. In addition, Exxon is prepared to provide partial claims settlement to those who have the potential to incur further damage at a later time. Full claims may, of course, be submitted and will be handled promptly. The Valdez Claims Office telephone number is 1-800-835-5406. And the Cordova number is 424-4202. At this time, a minimum of 18,000 barrels have been recovered from the surface of the water. Significant additional oil is included in skimmers and bladder tanks. Approximately 18,000 gallons were burned on March the 26th. Natural vaporization and dispersion reduced approximately 40% of the original spill in our estimation. The remainder appears to be split almost equally between Prince William Sound and the Gulf of Alaska and the shoreline, split three ways. Okay, that is my update, and now I'd like to call on John Tompkins to give you a little additional information on the ship salvage.
Good morning. What I'd like to do is, as Don said, give a little brief update, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. As Don mentioned, we have moved the vessel over to Outside Bay, which is in the southwest corner of Naked Island, and that was done on Wednesday, and about Wednesday night, pretty late Wednesday night, we were able to secure the vessel and start our next phase of operation. That next phase was really in three areas. We're talking about two diving teams that had gone starting an underwater survey, and that group has completed that survey as of early this morning. The second phase was a one diving team locating cracks, vertical type cracks, that we were drilling in order to keep the cracks from spreading any further. They're still undertaking that activity. The third phase had to do with skimming the oil off of the cargo tanks, and we're in the process of doing that, and we're bringing that oil from the top of the cargo tanks into a secure tank, which in the future we'll put on a barge and move away from the ship. Today, what we're going to start doing is going back to some of the areas that are heavily damaged and do a little more detail activity as to making sure that everything is secure there, so we have a strong area when we get ready to move the vessel. That is, no free plates or nothing that's so-called flapping or hanging down. The second thing that we're going to do is also look at a little more detail some of the areas where we think we can temporarily repair. And we're undertaking that today. We should be able to complete that. I think in about two to three days, we'll have a real good analysis of those particular areas. Today we're also beginning our kind of phase two, if you will, which is our analysis of what we have. Since we've just completed a survey, now we're looking to see, okay, how do we address these things? What's our best game plan? And that analysis ought to be completed sometime this week or in a few days. Our goal, of course, is to eventually prepare the vessel to go to sea and to bring her to a repair yard where we will completely repair the vessel, but to do that, we have some temporary repairs that we need to do here. That's about what I wanted to share with you, where we are at this moment. And I'm not sure, Don, if you want to answer questions about the salvage area first, I'd be happy to do that. Yes.
When do you expect that the vessel will be moved?
Well, that's very difficult to determine at this moment until we really have completed our analysis phase and established our game plan as to what we really need to do. And I really be afraid to hazard a guess because I'm really not sure whether the things are going to be.
A couple of weeks or a couple of months?
I would say a couple of weeks or plus. It depends on how much it takes to do some of the kind of repair. But you certainly aren't, you're just not sure at this moment. I think toward the end of the week I'll be able to give you a lot better assessment of that.
So at this point, how much residual oil is there still within the vessel? And Is the weather that's developed over the last 12, 24 hours going to affect the movement of that residual oil at all? Is there any chance of any more coming out because of the weather?
Well, there's about anywhere between 15,000, a little bit more barrels of oil on board, 15 to 17, my recollection of the last count. And those are mainly either in a secure tank or they're on the top 5 or 6 inches of some of the cargo tanks. We're skimming that oil off of those vessels now, off of those tanks now. As far as any concern about oil getting out of the ship, I'm very confident that we won't have any of that oil getting away from us. It's got a huge water leg underneath it, and the weather is not affecting us. Of course, the weather's been great up until today, and it's still not affecting us, and we don't intend, we're confident that it won't affect us.
Thank you.
This is a live press briefing from the Valdez Civic Center. Here's Don Cornett, manager of Exxon Alaska Operations.
Okay,
I have one
gentleman in the back right there.
You're estimating 2,300 barrels a day. That really is about twice the estimate that everybody else has come up with. And just sort of judging by the fact that we're now at 1,800 barrels, that would sort of back that 1,000 barrel a day figure up.
Well, the number of skimmers went up too. We're 39 skimmers now, and we've learned a little bit about some of these skimmers and how they work. I can't vouch for the number. It's what the operations people have on the board that says that's what they're averaging and what they expect to do a day. Yes?
Can you help me a little bit with the number of people you're hiring? I tried to get it from your statement, but I'm a little bit confused. Is it the total number of people that are non-Exxon employees that you have contracted local? And explain to me, if you would, approximately how much they're paid, what they're doing, whether most of them are locals or flying in here. Could you?
Yes. Just start at the bottom and come up. They're local people, with the exception of the experts that we brought in from around the world to do specific tasks, the ones that we've been talking to you about all along. These laborers that are being put on are all local people. At least that's our instructions to the contractors. what they're being paid, a rate that's sort of competitive with the North Slope rates, and I think it's in the $16-$17 an hour range.
The total number of one other question on that. When you employ them, it's completely your right, but are they asked to no longer speak to the press?
No.
They're
no.
Free to speak to any news organization if they so choose while they're under your contract?
Yes.
Okay, and again, the total numbers of, you're instructing your contractors, if somebody's from California and said, boy, this is a great wage and I want to come up and take advantage of it, your contractors try not to hire that person and only stick with the local people?
Our contractors have been instructed very firmly about local hire. They're very familiar with the issue. They work here all the time, and they understand the sensitivity of local hire. I don't know if there's, if someone lives here and has grown up here and is in college at Stanford and comes back and gets a job, I don't know if they're local or not, but I suspect they probably qualify. But we have resisted many, many offers of volunteers or people to come up Now, we brought some people up for the bird rescue and mammal rescue centers who are specialists in their field, but for the laborers, they are local, to my knowledge, completely.
I wonder if you could comment on some reports that came out over the weekend that Exxon was warned as early as 1985 that Captain Hazelwood had drinking problems. And
I can't comment on that, George. As I explained the other day, the spokesmanship for that issue has moved to the chairman of the board, and I really am charged with trying to get this job done that we're doing in Prince William Sound. I understand the reason for your question, but you really have to put it to the people in New York who are the spokesman for that now. There's a gentleman right behind.
In Sound, if I may follow up. When is Exxon going to begin using the high-pressure hoses, and are they coming in from France?
We have scoured the countryside in the U.S. I knew that there were some on the East Coast, but they're not nearly in the numbers. When they had the Cadiz spill, Amoco Cadiz spill in France, they used them extensively, and they built large numbers of them, hundreds of them. And yes, we've asked them to ship them in, and we will start using them when this committee that is directing the onshore cleanup says this is a spot where you can use them, and the oil is off the water enough in this area that you can begin to clean the shoreline.
Do you have a general idea when that might happen?
I don't right now. I'll try to get you an answer to that.
Don, you said in your statement that all manpower is on hand that can be effectively used. What use to you, then, is the military help that's supposedly coming in?
The military is at the disposal of the Coast Guard, is the way the general put it this morning, I think, on the Today Show. And he said, we will do what the Coast Guard directs us and no more. And I don't know what the Coast Guard is having them do. I suspect that they are helping some. I think I've heard that there's a group of a company of construction battalion or CB people coming in to help build the Bird and Mammal Rescue Center in Seward. But beyond that, it's mostly the logistical support, flying in additional equipment, and the things that they're good at.
What plan do you have, if any, to reimburse the U.S. military for any expenses it incurs in support of the spill?
I think we're anticipating that the costs that are incurred by governments at all levels that can be attributed to this spill will be eventually reimbursed by Exxon. Yes, sir.
Could you go back over that 40% figure that you mentioned about what's been evaporated and so forth, and how do you base that? What do you base that on? Does that mean that 40% of the spilled oil has actually been taken care of by nature and is no longer a threat?
That's right, and that's not unusual. You remember, if you're here in the early stages of this, I was guessing 25-35%. They've gone back and looked at the characteristics of the oil, the temperature of the water, and it's their best estimate now. I'll reread that. A minimum of 18,000 barrels have been recovered. Significant additional oil is included in skimmers and bladder tanks. Approximately 18,000 gallons were burned on March 26, which isn't very much. Natural vaporization and dispersion reduced approximately 40% of the original oil, and the remainder of it is divided between the Gulf, the Sound, and the shoreline.
60% of the original spill now?
Yes, that's not unusual. Yes.
Can you tell, how the change in the weather is specifically affecting your operations and what your estimates are of what it will do to the movement of the oil in the next 24 hours or so?
We're tracking the oil both in the Sound and in the Gulf twice daily, I believe. And the big factor, of course, is the wind. And the wind has been very good for us, with the exception of that one night it blew at 70 miles an hour when the oil was still in the Sound. It's my understanding that the winds today are still easterly, about 35 to 45 miles an hour in the Gulf. And that's very favorable. It tends to push the oil further out to sea. And also, as it whips up the waves, the energy of the waves, wet burnings like dispersion, it breaks the oil up and tends to make it more accessible to the forces of nature in it.
Excuse me, have you had to pull back any boats off the water because of this
I don't know. I know we have standards above which we will not operate. We have people in the field to make sure that we're operating safely. And also, the cloudiness and the fog of the morning slows down the flights. But I don't have any specific information as to how many boats have not come.
What you said about 39 skimmers may not actually be the case today because of the weather.
Well, the weather that I was quoting to you was in the Gulf, where we're not skimming in the Gulf, we're skimming in the Sound, and to my knowledge, the weather today has not hampered skimming operations, but nobody has come up and told me that.
The State of Alaska just held a press conference, and they said that Exxon was pulling in its skimmers because of the bad weather.
Well, then they have information that I don't have. I'm just telling you all that I know up to this point.
Mr. Cornett?
Yes.
Some fishermen in Cordova told me that rather than sign contracts with Exxon to work at your effort on the spill, they would get some dewatering pumps themselves, and they were going to go out and collect oil. Do you intend to buy that back from them if they deliver it to you?
I would have to cross that bridge at that time.
Right now to do that?
You're telling me something I don't know.
Skimmed oil. There was a wire service report that it's still good to make roads out of or something. Is that what Exxon's going to do with it?
No, what you do with it is if you get it up off the water, you can put it into a processing plant and just take the water out of it, and it's crude again. You can make gasoline or anything else out of it.
Excuse me. What's that oil worth, by the way, a gallon? How much is that oil worth?
I mean, well, it's worth a little less than the crude that comes out of the pipeline because it has to be processed some more, so that lowers the value.
If somebody else then and brought back to you, is it worth the same as the crude that comes out of the pipeline?
I don't think so.
Do you have any estimate of how much Exxon has spent to date and how much it's likely to spend on cleaning up the spill?
I don't have it. It's a large and growing number, but I don't.
Hundreds of millions, tens of millions.
I don't know, tens of millions, probably, at this point. Yes.
Have you provided any reimbursement to the state to support its operating expenses in advance of some final settlement that you expect to make with the state?
I don't know where that stands, but I have given a verbal commitment to the state that if they will let us know what they need and some sort of a form of accounting that we can go back and reconcile at the end, that we will either advance money to the state to keep their cash flow going, or they can keep track of it as they go and send it to us like a bill, and we'll pay it promptly. But yes, we have committed to do it. I just don't know where the mechanism stands today. There's a lot of, in a lot of these things, there's a lot of grinding that goes on between the expression of your good intention and actually getting it into somebody's hand, and we're finding that in a lot of areas, but I guess that's to be expected. Yes, sir.
There was a lot of news over the weekend about a record jump in the price of gasoline. Is Exxon passing on the cost of this cleanup to the American consumer?
At this point, we're not passing it along to anybody, but in the normal course of things in any business, the expenses that you incur are deductible on your income tax, and if it gets to the consumer, that will be where it gets, how it gets there. Any other questions?
Are you going to get a general idea of how much would be claimed from fishermen and others who have had losses because of this accident?
I don't think we've even seen the real beginning of it yet. We've had 400 claims, and we're just now beginning to get money out on the street because, as I said, it takes a lot of grinding in between the expression of your good intentions and actually getting it, all the mechanisms worked out to where people can take advantage of it. I don't think it takes a little while for the trust level to build up too. People don't really want to believe that they can walk in and you're going to write them a check and walk out. Yes.
How many checks have you actually issued? I understand some checks were issued in Cordova for emergency assistance. Can you tell us how many checks have been issued and to what amounts?
Okay, well, I'll let Don speak about the claims. We have, I believe, issued a check for $1 million to the city of Seward and $500,000 to Kodiak
just advanced.
Okay, you want to answer that question?
We advanced $250,000 to the Cordova District Fishermen United. That was yesterday.
Has Don Marsden?
We've had several people in Cordova come and talked to us about placing their claims, and we gave them the instructions, told them about our plans, and are willing to sit down with them again and talk to them. That's about where it stands.
Have you given $1 million to the aquaculture?
Yes, we have.
You have a lot of fishermen and fishing boats working for you. If the fishermen file a claim for lost earnings from fishing, will their income in working for the spill be counted against their claim for losses in fishing?
No.
When you do settle a claim, are you...
Excuse me, let me go back. You're talking about Cordova.
I'm talking about all the fishermen that have been hired to work in the cleanup effort who are making...
No. The answer is still no.
When you settle a claim with a fisherman, are you asking the fisherman to sign a waiver of future liability arising from the claim, or what are the mechanics between saying you're settling on the one hand and any legal rights that the fisherman may wish to pursue through the legal system at a later date?
It really depends upon the situation that you're presented with, but I have been telling the fishermen, their organizations, that we are taking partial settlements. Okay, that we may close out, say, 1989, but we're leaving open 1990 and beyond.
If you're settling 1989, are you asking them to sign a waiver of all claims arising from, say, the 1989 season then?
No, we're being very specific as to the releases we're taking. They will come in and tell us what their claim is and what they want left open. And we are adhering to their wishes and leaving those claims open. It's a step-by-step process that we're taking in this, and eventually we will reach, after 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 steps, in settling the entire claim down the road.
Will you take claims from out-of-state fishermen who fish Prince William Sound?
Yes.
You're listening to Don Marsden, who's the claim manager
for
Exxon.
Any other questions or claims?
Over the weekend, Exxon had pending with the Coast Guard a request to use chemical dispersants in the Gulf of Alaska. What is the status of that? Have you dropped it now that the weather has turned apparently for the more favorable out in the Gulf?
It's my understanding it's pending.
Do you intend to pursue it?
If we get permission.
And you still want the permission?
It's my understanding we do.
Any idea when you'll hear?
No.
Yes. Exxon was not mounting any effort at the leading edge of the slick around Gore Point and south of the Kenai Peninsula. In light of the change in weather that may be dispersing the oil naturally, is Exxon relieved that the weather is going to do what Exxon was not doing?
We are grateful for any good breaks we get on this. Any other questions?
This is a claims question. Are you accepting any claims from, say, cannery workers?
Don Marsden is returning.
Most definitely. We have talked to several of the processors, and they are cooperating with us, and we are trying to get to the people that are suffering losses and try to provide them with emergency assistance to carry them over when they're having this hardship.
And seasonal workers, again, would also be eligible for that, people, migrant workers who come up, college students who normally come up and work the canneries. They all
yes, and that's the information that the processors are providing us, so we don't have John Smith from somewhere that never came up here before making a claim against us.
You have to prove that they were previously employed.
That's correct.
The turnover is extremely high in the shore workers in the fishing industry. Is there any way you're going to try to weed out the people who wouldn't have come and those who were coming for the first time, for instance, or fishermen who had intentions of coming for the first time to finish, had just bought a permit but had no demonstrated track record? How are you going to handle that?
We're aware of the problem. We're going to give special consideration to those cases that you've just mentioned, and I've told those people that we would take it on an individual basis and see what can be worked out. Yes, sir.
I want to try and clear up two discrepancies. Exxon says there's no oil leaking from the ship, but yesterday the state of Alaska said there was a sheen around the ship and the boom didn't appear to be holding. The second discrepancy, if I could clear it up, the Coast Guard said this morning, just a couple hours ago, that only 1,000 barrels a day of oil was being cleaned up. Exxon says 2,800 barrels a day. Can you clear those two things up?
Not till I get back to the office. This is the information I'm given on that. But on the sheen around the ship, maybe. You want to come in?
I can clear up one of them. I was at the press conference Saturday with the Admiral, and I think he was being conservative. He estimated that we would pick up 1,000. I saw the board Saturday. We were hoping to pick up 1,500. We actually picked up 2,000 that day, and we picked up like 2,300 yesterday. So that the difference in the numbers is just the factual data on what we picked up.
Okay, John, you want to talk about the ship leaking?
John Tompkin of the salvage team.
The sheen around the ship, what we found happening is as the boats are alongside the vessel and undertaking the diving activity, they may occasionally scrape against the vessel, and the turbulence of the diving and that scraping will end up having a little piece of oil or something that may come off the ship, and you could end up getting a sheen undertaken. And we flew over it yesterday on two occasions.
And mammal rescue centers who are specialists in their field, but for the laborers, they are local, to my knowledge, completely.
I wonder if you could comment on some reports that came out over the weekend that Exxon was warned as early as 1985 that Captain Hazelwood had drinking problems.
And I can't comment on that, George. As I explained the other day, the spokesmanship for that issue has moved to the chairman of the board, and I really am charged with trying to get this job done that we're doing in Prince William Sound. I understand the reason for your question, but you really have to put it to the people in New York who are the spokesman for that now. There's a gentleman right behind.
Prince William Sound, if I may follow up. When is Exxon going to begin using the high-pressure hoses, and are they coming in from France?
We have scoured the countryside in the U.S. I knew that there were some on the East Coast, but they're not nearly in the numbers. When they had the Cadiz spill, Amoco Cadiz spill in France, they used them extensively, and they built large numbers of them, hundreds of them. And yes, we've asked them to ship them in, and we will start using them when this committee that is directing the onshore cleanup says this is a spot where you can use them, and the oil is off the water enough in this area that you can begin to clean the shoreline.
Do you have a general idea when that might happen?
I don't right now. I'll try to get you an answer to that.
Don, you said in your statement that all manpower is on hand that can be effectively used. What use to you then is the military help that's supposedly coming in?
The military is at the disposal of the Coast Guard, is the way the general put it this morning, I think, on the Today Show. And he said we will do what the Coast Guard directs us and no more. And I don't know what the Coast Guard is having them do. I suspect that they're helping some. I think I've heard that there's a group of a company of construction battalion or CB people coming in to help build the Bird and Mammal Rescue Center in Seward. But beyond that, it's mostly the logistical support, flying in additional equipment, and the things that they're good at.
What plan do you have, if any, to reimburse the U.S. military for any expenses it incurs in support of the spill?
I think we're anticipating that the costs that are incurred by governments at all levels that can be attributed to the spill will be eventually reimbursed by Exxon. Yes, sir.
Could you go back over that 40% figure that you mentioned about what's been evaporated and so forth, and how do you base that? What do you base that on? Does that mean that 40% of the spilled oil has actually been taken care of by nature and is no longer a threat?
That's right, and that's not unusual. You remember, if you're here in the early stages of this, I was guessing 25-35%. They've gone back and looked at the characteristics of the oil, the temperature of the water, and it's their best estimate now. I'll reread that. A minimum of 18,000 barrels have been recovered. Significant additional oil is included in skimmers and bladder tanks. Approximately 18,000 gallons were burned on March 26, which isn't very much. Natural vaporization and dispersion reduced approximately 40% of the original oil, and the remainder of it is divided between the Gulf, the Sound,
and the shoreline.
60% of the original spill now?
Yes, that's not unusual. Yes.
Can you tell, how the change in the weather is specifically affecting your operations and what your estimates are of what it will do to the movement of the oil in the next 24 hours or so?
We're tracking the oil both in the Sound and in the Gulf twice daily, I believe. And the big factor, of course, is the wind. And the wind has been very good for us, with the exception of that one night it blew at 70 miles an hour when the oil was still in the Sound. It's my understanding that the winds today are still easterly, about 35 to 45 miles an hour in the Gulf. And that's very favorable. It tends to push the oil further out to sea. And also, as it whips up the waves, the energy of the waves, work very much like a dispersant. It breaks the oil up and tends to make it more accessible to the forces of nature, isn't it?
Have you had to pull back any boats off the water because of this?
I don't know. I know we have standards above which we will not operate. We have people in the field to make sure that we're operating safely. And also the cloudiness and the fog of the morning slows down the flights. But I don't have any specific information as to how many boats have not gone.
So what you said about 39 skimmers may not actually be the case today because of the weather.
Well, the weather that I was quoting to you was in the Gulf, where we're not skimming in the Gulf, we're skimming in the Sound. And to my knowledge, the weather today has not hampered skimming operations, but nobody has come up and told me that.
State of Alaska just held a press conference, and they said that Exxon was pulling in its skimmers because of the bad weather.
Well, then they have information that I don't have. I'm just telling you all that I know up to this point.
Mr. Cornett?
Yes?
Some fishermen in Cordova told me that rather than sign contracts with Exxon to work at your effort on the spill, they would get some dewatering pumps themselves, and they were going to go out and collect oil. Do you intend to buy that back from them if they deliver it to you?
I would have to cross that bridge at that time.
It's right now to do that?
You're telling me something I don't know.
What are you going to do with that skimmed oil? There was a wire service report that it's still good to make roads out of or something. Is that what Exxon's going to do with it?
No, what you do with it is if you get it up off the water, you can put it into a processing plant and just take the water out of it, and it's crude again. You can make gasoline or anything else out of it.
Excuse me. What's that oil worth, by the way, a gallon? How much is that oil worth?
Well, it's worth a little less than the crude that comes out of the pipeline because it has to be processed some more, so that lowers the value.
By somebody else then and brought back to you, is it worth the same as the crude that comes out of the pipeline?
I don't think so.
Do you have any estimate of how much Exxon has spent to date and how much it's likely to spend on cleaning up the spill?
I don't have it. It's a large and growing number, but I don't.
Hundreds of millions, tens of millions.
I don't know, tens of millions probably at this point. Yes.
Have you provided any reimbursement to the state to support its operating expenses in advance of some final settlement that you expect to make with the state?
I don't know where that stands, but I have given a verbal commitment to the state that if they will let us know what they need and some sort of a form of accounting that we can go back and reconcile at the end, that we will either advance money to the state to keep their cash flow going, or they can keep track of it as they go and send it to us like a bill, and we'll pay it promptly. But yes, we have committed to do it. I just don't know where the mechanism stands today. There's a lot of, in a lot of these things, there's a lot of grinding that goes on between the expression of your good intention and actually getting it into somebody's hand, and we're finding that in a lot of areas, but I guess that's to be expected. Yes, sir.
There was a lot of news over the weekend about a record jump in the price of gasoline. Is Exxon passing on the cost of this cleanup to the American consumer?
At this point, we're not passing it along to anybody, but in the normal course of things in any business, the expenses that you incur are deductible on your income tax, and if it gets to the consumer, that will be where it gets, how it gets there. Any other questions?
Are you willing to get a general idea of how much would be claimed from fishermen and others who have had losses because of this accident?
I don't think we've even seen the real beginning of it yet. We've had 400 claims, and we're just now beginning to get money out on the street because, as I said, it takes a lot of grinding in between expression of your good intentions and actually getting it, all the mechanisms worked out to where people can take advantage of it. I mean, I don't think the, it takes a little while for the trust level to build up too. People don't really want to believe that they can walk in and you're going to write them a check and you walk out. And they walk out.
How many checks have you actually issued? I understand some checks were issued in Cordova for emergency assistance. Can you tell us how many checks have been issued and to what amounts?
Okay, I'll let Don speak about the claims. We have, I believe, issued a check for $1 million to the city of Seward and $500,000 to Kodiak. Okay, you want to answer that question?
We advanced $250,000 to the Cordova District Fishermen United. That was yesterday.
That's Don Marsden.
We've had several people in Cordova come and talk to us about placing their claims, and we gave them the instructions, told them about our plans, and are willing to sit down with them again and talk to them. That's about where it stands.
Have you given $1 million to the aquaculture?
Yes, we have.
You have a lot of fishermen and fishing boats working for you. If the fishermen file a claim for lost earnings from fishing, will their income in working for the spill be counted against their claim for losses in fishing?
No.
When you do settle a claim, are you...
Let me go back. You're talking about Cordova.
I'm talking about all the fishermen that have been hired to work in the cleanup effort who are making...
No. The answer is still no.
When you settle a claim with a fisherman, are you asking the fisherman to sign a waiver of future liability arising from the claim, or what are the mechanics between saying you're settling on the one hand and any legal rights that the fisherman may wish to pursue through the legal system at a later date?
It really depends upon the situation that you're presented with, but I have been telling the fishermen, their organizations, that we are taking partial settlements. Okay, that we may close out, say, 1989, but we're leaving open 1990 and beyond.
And if you're settling 1989, are you asking them to sign a waiver of all claims arising from, say, the 1989 season then?
No, we're being very specific as to the releases we're taking. They will come in and tell us what their claim is and what they want left open. And we are adhering to their wishes and leaving those claims open. It's a step-by-step process that we're taking in this. And eventually we will reach, after three or four or five or six steps, in settling the entire claim down the road.
Will you take claims from out-of-state fishermen who fish Prince William Sound?
Yes.
We're listening to Don Marsden, who's the claim manager
for
Exxon.
Any other questions on claims?
Over the weekend, Exxon had pending with the Coast Guard a request to use chemical dispersants in the Gulf of Alaska. What is the status of that? Have you dropped it now that the weather has turned apparently for the more favorable out in the Gulf?
It's my understanding it's pending.
Do you intend to pursue it?
If we get permission.
You still want the permission?
Because it's my understanding we do.
Any idea when you'll hear?
No. Yes.
It appears that Exxon was not mounting any effort at the leading edge of the slick around Gore Point and south of the Kenai Peninsula. In light of the change in weather that may be dispersing the oil naturally, is Exxon relieved that the weather is going to do what Exxon was not doing?
We are grateful for any good breaks we get on this. Any other questions?
This is a claims question. Are you accepting any claims from, say, cannery workers?
Don Marsden is returning.
Most definitely. We have talked to several of the processors, and they are cooperating with us, and we are trying to get to the people that are suffering losses and try to provide them with emergency assistance to carry them over when they're having this hardship.
And seasonal workers, again, would also be eligible for that, people, migrant workers who come up, college students who normally come up and work the canneries, they all
Yes, and that's the information that the processes are providing us, so we don't have John Smith from somewhere that never came up here before making a claim against us.
You have to prove that they were previously employed.
That's correct.
The turnover is extremely high in the shore workers in the fishing industry. Is there any way you're going to try to weed out the people who wouldn't have come and those who were coming for the first time, for instance, or fishermen who had intentions of coming for the first time to finish and just bought a permit but had no demonstrated track record? How are you going to handle that?
We're aware of the problem. We're going to give special consideration to those cases that you've just mentioned. And I've told those people that we would take it on an individual basis and see what can be worked out. Yes, sir.
I want to try and clear up two discrepancies. Exxon says there's no oil leaking from the ship, but yesterday the state of Alaska said there was a sheen around the ship and the boom didn't appear to be holding. The second discrepancy, if I could clear it up, the Coast Guard said this morning, just a couple hours ago, that only 1,000 barrels a day of oil was being cleaned up. Exxon says 2,800 barrels a day. Can you clear those two things up?
Not till I get back to the office. This is the information I'm given on that. But on the sheen around the ship, maybe. You want to come in?
I can clear up one of them. Okay. I was at the press conference Saturday with the Admiral, and I think he was being conservative. He estimated that we would pick up 1,000. I saw the board Saturday. We were hoping to pick up 1,500. We actually picked up 2,000 that day, and we picked up like 2,300 yesterday. So that the difference in the numbers is just the factual data on what we picked up.
Okay, John, you want to talk about the ship leaking?
John Tompkin of the salvage team.
The sheen around the ship. What we found happening is as the boats are alongside the vessel and undertaking the diving activity, they may occasionally scrape against the vessel, and the turbulence of the diving and that scraping will end up having a little piece of oil or something that may come off the ship, and you could end up getting a sheen undertaken. And we flew over it yesterday on